Chapter 11.
Maybe I should have suggested a campsite closer to the top,
I huffed to Redburn, as we both trekked up the hill with our shields held high above our heads.
Maybe,
he panted, and then shot me a good-natured grin.
But that's the purpose. Consider that from this point forward, the trials have already begun.
But what about the preparation? I asked, as I adjusted my sweaty grip on the shield.
If you think of everything as the trials, then what better preparation is there?
He said in his optimistic roundabout logic. I appreciated his outlook, and for some reason it made the shield over my head feel a tad lighter.
How many times have you done this ceremony?
I asked him, as we rounded another curve.
I've been partaking in the ceremony since my 17th season, after I took over my father's Asher legacy,
he said with what sounded like a mixture of honor and sadness. I recalled from a conversation I had with Mech about how this so-called legacy was passed down from the duelists to their children. Because of the way the duelist stones worked, you were either divinely blessed by the goddess on the night of the supernatural comet, Brea, or you had to inherit it through killing another. No exceptions for blood relations. So that meant Redburn had to have killed his father when the time came in order to become the Asher of his estate.
I'm sorry, I said on reflex. What for?
Came the puzzled reply.
Well, it's just where I'm from, children of lords and ladies don't have to kill their parents to inherit their blood status, I said. Oh, I see,
the jackrabbit man chuckled.
Usually when fathers and sons enact the passing rite, it is at a moment in the father's life when he is ready and willing to greet death. My father, Fearsome Redburn, was plagued with a bone sickness that robbed him of his swiftness of movement and his eyesight. For these reasons, he determined to die with honor at the hand of his beloved son, instead of wasting away without his dignity.
When you put it like that, I guess I can see the appeal, I said, and blinked through the sting of sweat falling in my eyes.
Any signs of the magistrate's place or what?
The jackrabbit man laughed.
I think it's around the next bend.
We saved our breath to make the last push up the mountain, along with dozens of other duelists doing the same with their own shields above their heads. It looked like everyone was congregating in the large plaza outside of the imposing manor that was actually carved into the side of the mountain like fucking Gondor or something. The magnificent lord of the mountain hall, Gelavain, was standing in front of the steps with his own imposing black shield raised high.
Fellow Ashers!
The owl-like man boomed out, and the ram lord broke away from the crowd so he could walk up next to Vane with his own burnished copper shield.
Welcome to Gate Town, and to Monger Estate!
A cheer rang out from all and sundry, and all the gathered duelists lifted their shields toward the sky three times in rapid succession.
Gratitude to you, Gela, Mech thundered. Now let the preparations begin.
Another loud blast of the fanfare blared out as several beautiful women in sheer flowing gowns poured down the steps, and I startled and almost dropped my shield completely. Before I could make that disaster of a mistake, one of the women whisked my shield away.
Just go with it,
Redburn nudged me, and gave me a genial smile as another gorgeous woman carted off his shield as well. Maybe there should have been a preparation on the preparation, because I felt like a fish out of water, just like during Blue Night. I really needed to talk to Mech about informing me of all the details, especially since I was doing him a favor. For reasons I still didn't know. Oh, yeah. Me and the big guy were definitely going to have a little chat. For now, I was glad I had made such an ally in my pal Dreadful to take my social cues from.
Do not fret, my friend, Redburn said,
with his hand on my shoulder as we followed the flood of other Ashers into the magistrate's castle-like manor.
You'll have to forgive me for not studying up, but can you tell me what's happening next?
I asked the jackrabbit man, as we traversed the set of steep stairs up to the entrance. I know a little from when Jenner tried to prep me leading up to this, but other than some sweat lodge thing where we all sit around and drink a lot of tea, I'm pretty much in the dark.
Not to worry, he laughed. My father left me in the dark as well, and as much as I learned to understand his trial-by-fire teaching method, I didn't always appreciate the fact, so I'm happy to be your guide.
Thanks, Tred. I clapped him on the back.
First, we gather for the sharing of kibar and purified water,
Redburn explained, as we were all ushered to stand in a circle while Mech and Vane walked to the center.
I'm afraid I'll have to leave your side for this part, but I shall be back momentarily.
Before I could ask where he was going, my guide slipped away to join Mech and Vane. Oh yeah, that's right. It was easy to overlook the fact that the mild-mannered Redburn was actually the governor of Mech Valley.
My noble governors, Redburn and Vane will do the honors of passing around the kebab bark the ashes of old used to sustain themselves with when they felt the weariness of their burden.
The Ram Lord gestured with his hand, and maidservants with silver-domed trays lined up in front of them while more dancing concubines removed the lids. Then the three lords of Nada each took a large platter piled with flat square pieces that looked like pita bread and went around the room so the other ashers could take a sample. It reminded me a little of a church communion thing I went to one time with foster family number whatever. When I took a piece of the bread, I lightly sniffed it, but it didn't really smell like anything, which I was thankful for because my stomach seemed to be doing somersaults. The other ashers waited until all of the pieces of kebar bark were distributed before holding them up like the Ram Lord was doing. I followed the crowd, and held mine up as well.
Mercedes B.,
Mech toasted with his bark piece, before he folded it up and ate the kebar in one mouthful.
Mercedes B.,
I added my cry to the group, and shoved the piece into my mouth. Aside from being dry, the bread-like bark kind of tasted like a stale tortilla combined with seaweed, and I crunched through it hurriedly.
Now, please, drink the water offered from my own fountain,
Gelavane gestured to the pretty serving women, who now had bronze trays laden with chalices filled with crisp water. Redburn joined me again as he finished his own kebar, and we both followed the massive people as they started to stream out of the soaring entrance hall and down a set of stairs. "Where are we going now?" I asked, as I nearly levitated off the balls of my feet with nervous energy. Maybe it was in the bark, but I felt like I'd just downed three monsters and a whole pot of black coffee. What was in that kebar, Dred?
"Ha ha! Yes, you must be feeling the effects quite strongly,"
Redburn said, as we jaunted down the steps and entered a series of descending staircases that reminded me of frickin' Hogwarts.
"I remember my first time trying kebar. I had the energy of six men. I pleased my first wife eight times that night."
"Okay," I said, and tried to hold in the inappropriate laughter that threatened to bubble to the surface.
"My baths aren't as decadent as the Asher Lord's,"
the craggy voice of Gelavane floated up the endless staircase corridor as the multitude of duelists marched ever downward.
"But I do hope you gleam from them as much pleasure as you can."
Shortly after this declaration, it seemed as if we hit the steam barrier, and the lower we went, the thicker the atmosphere began to feel. Something sharp and pungent assaulted my olfactory senses. It reminded me of the sharpness of citrus combined with the smoky undertone of frankincense, and my skin tingled wherever it was in contact with the steam. When we all finally made it to the large chamber at the bottom of the stairs, the servant women congregated around us three to a man.
"Don't be alarmed, but they're going to redress you in the ceremonial garb,"
Redburn warned, as he was being tended to by his own entourage.
Right, I said, and reluctantly let these women undo my armored belt.
I tried not to feel awkward as they undressed me down to just the doula stone around my neck and helped me into a thin pair of cotton-like shorts. A low crystal chime sounded from somewhere, and more servants came in with steaming cups of the tea I'd read about.
"This is the time of solace," Redburn intoned, as he plucked two cups of tea off a passing tray.
He then placed a hand on my shoulder and ushered me over to one of the large coal braziers set up around the large chamber. Ashers of all shapes and sizes were congregating around them with hot towels draped over their heads as they sipped their tea. Every so often, a maidservant would pour a ladle of water over the hot coals in order to add more steam to the air. If the ashers weren't bathing in the steam, they were actually bathing in the sunken pools dotted around the chamber as the pretty women tended to their every whim.
"I'm sure there are back rooms if you wish to partake in one of Vane's concubines," Redburn said, as he followed my line of sight.
"No," I sputtered. "I'm married."
"That is not something that matters in situations like these," the jackrabbit man said with an odd look on his face.
"Well, it matters to me, so I'm good for now," I muttered, and took a big gulp of tea,
which was a mistake because it tasted like the inside of my Nikes after a hard run.
"Ha!"
Redburn said, and clapped me on the back.
"You are devoted to your wives, I can tell. Not to worry. The time of solace is for you to use as you please. Most like to rest or meditate, but be sure you drink 2 more cups of tea at the very least."
"What does this stuff do, by the way?" I asked, and took a much smaller sip this time. It still tasted like feet.
"The tea invigorates your blood so you'll not become weak from the blood loss," Redburn said, and moved over to one of the wooden benches so he could sit with his eyes closed.
I took this as my cue to let the guy do his own solace thing, and found my own low wooden bench next to one of the braziers. A maidservant refilled my teacup, and I downed my 2nd and 3rd cups in a row before she could leave again. Even though the vile substance made me want to gag, it was better to get it out of the way now, kind of like ripping off a Band-Aid. If this was similar to the tea Madame Midgeon forced on Horace, then I would never tease him about being bested by tepid leaf water ever again. Nasty. Now that it was over, I could follow the jackrabbit man's example, and I crisscrossed my legs in order to enter my own meditative trance. Slipping into that deep, restive state had been getting easier, although I hadn't tried it wired to the gills on super bark, so this time was a little tricky. Once I managed it, though, I was able to float along in between dreaming and full consciousness, as if I was traveling along a warm, lazy river. Images would occasionally swim to the surface, but they never stayed for long, and I didn't feel any pressure to examine them for any significance. When the fanfare of trumpets could eventually be heard again from the top of the manor, I was startled out of my light trance and almost fell off my bench.
"Take care, Alex, my friend," Mech said, and gripped me by the wrist so I wouldn't complete my trajectory to the ground. "The floors are slick."
"There's a lot about this little favor you forgot to tell me about, Gavlane," I said, as we were all corralled back toward the Harry Potter stairs.
"Builds character," the big guy said, with an askance grin on his bearded face. "Besides, my first impression of you was when you were thrown into a life-or-death situation, and you were way more unprepared than this. And look at you now. You turned out just fine."
"Sure," I said with an eye roll worthy of Rylan status.
"Don't worry. You'll like what comes next, I promise," the Ramlord laughed. "Keep up."
I grinned back at the challenge and semi-raced the Asher Lord up the stairs. That bark really was doing the trick, because I took to those bad boys like it was cake. The next stop on this magical mystery tour was a large parlor-like room with huge sweeping ceilings and a dank-smelling smoke wafting in the air. More of Vane's concubines were there to slip white tunics over our heads before the Ashers were then escorted down another dim, winding hall, and finally outside in a burst of dazzling late-afternoon sun and spectator cheers.
How long were we doing the solace thing? I asked Mech, as I blinked through my streaming eyes.
"Are you shocked you meditated for so long?"
the Ramlord asked, with an amused tone to his voice.
"No, just that it was so easy," I replied.
"It is the fellowship of being united with so many ashes over a single cause," he explained. "You might have experienced the same sensation of camaraderie during the herald hunts."
"Yeah, that was cool," I said, and Mech laughed in his rolling thunder way that made me grin even wider.
"Cool, huh?"
he repeated, and he placed a hand on my shoulder so we could both walk out into the knee-deep water of Gelavane's massive diamond-shaped fountain.
"I admit I have missed hearing those little travelerisms. I haven't heard many since my grandfather's passing many years ago."
"Feel free to steal from my weird lexicon any time, Gav," I said, as I punched the big guy in the arm. "What's next, by the way? You said I would like it."
"Oh, you definitely will, my friend,"
he said, and pointed over to the far end of the pool.
More beautiful women dressed in a cavalcade of rainbow colors began to file in with our previously absent shields held high over their heads. A wide smile stretched across my face when I almost instantly spotted Zoe and Shay frolicking toward me through the crystal-clear water. They were barefoot and clad in almost toga-like dresses of blue and red, respectively, and they were absolutely the most beautiful sight to my sore eyes. "What are you two doing here?" I asked, as I took the heavy-ass shield and set it down on the fountain's ledge behind me. "I thought you were coming later, not that I'm complaining."
"We are here to help with the burdening,"
Shay explained, as she pulled out a pair of shackles. "Oh, right," I said, as I recalled the story Mech and his wife told me about the symbolic ankle cuffs that also somehow cut me just enough to let out my blood for the tithes. "Will they hurt much?"
"No. The tea and the kebab act to numb the surface of the skin," Mech spoke up as he gathered his own cuffs from his bird wife, Breida. "Watch. Give me your hand."
I let the Ramlord take my finger and run it around the sharp cuff, and I marveled at the blood beating to the surface of my skin without any signs of pain. "Neat," I said.
"Necessary,"
Dawn, Mech's antler-bedecked wife, corrected from behind us. She was stunningly dressed to the nines in a ceremonial-looking priestess robe that was pure white with the golden symbol of the sun emblazoned on the front. Pearls and diamonds dripped from the small rack of antlers poking up through her platinum hair, and she looked as brilliant as a goddess when she smiled. "Hello, Lady Dawn," I said, and watched the corner of her usually stoic mouth twitch upwards ever so briefly. Her expression reminded me that she had a pretty morbid sense of humor, and I smirked. "I notice how we are all not boiling to death yet. How am I doing so far?"
"Quite well, considering I haven't even blessed the waters of Gela's fountain yet."
Her lips twitched again before they stretched into another one of those blinding smiles.
"You are a fast study on Aelemic humor, Traveler Brightwood. Gavi, you were right about this one."
"Right about what?"
the green parakeet woman asked with a bit of a vapid look on her round face.
"Nothing, Breida, my sweet," Mech said with a doting smile and hugged her.
"Gavi," I mouthed at him, and he mock glared at me over the top of his second wife's head.
"Now, sit on the ledge, husband,"
Zoe then instructed.
"Let us adorn you with the burdens of Mercedes's blessing."
I did as she asked and observed how all of the other Ashers had their own wives or concubines tending to their feet. Some were dancing and gyrating around in an erotic display that looked just as gauche as it was uncomfortable to watch. So I fixed my eyes on my own wives, which was not a hardship in the slightest. Zoe came out of the water and knelt on the ledge behind me. In her hand, she held her ink brush as well as a small pot of rich bronze ink, and my eyes grew wide in realization when I felt the first brushstrokes drying in the mild breeze. "More tattoos?" I asked, as I tried to watch her every mark.
"Yes,"
she said, and turned my head to face the front.
"No peeking."
All right," I grumbled, as if I was put out. But really, the sight of my phoenix wife kneeling in the water between my knees had me beyond delighted. Shay's right leg came up, and she patted the top of her thigh, peeking through the wet red fabric.
"Foot, please."
"Yes, ma'am," I said, and rested my right heel on her leg. Her green eyes locked with mine, and I couldn't tear my gaze away even if I tried. Shay clasped one of the cuffs of the shackles around my ankle with a snap, and then she lowered that foot back into the water while she maneuvered my left foot up to her leg so she could repeat the process.
"Nothing hurts,"
she murmured, as she began to massage my calves and shins. "My feet feel like they just recovered from falling asleep, but other than that, no pain," I said. And my eyes fluttered closed when she continued her in-depth massage up my knees and onto my thighs. That feels nice."
"Okay, done,"
Zoe announced from behind me. And I heard her stow the ink bottle and brush away to wherever it was she also stashed her weapons, probably.
"I want to see,"
Shay said, and climbed out of the pool in an enthusiastic spray of water.
"Oh, dear heart, you have outdone yourself."
"What is it?" I asked.
"Here, husband,"
she said, and pulled out a set of mirrors that looked like little magnifying glasses from a chain around her neck. She adjusted them so I was able to see the design spanning from shoulder to shoulder and halfway down the backs of my arms. Holy fuck, Zoe! I whistled as I observed the image of a bronze-colored bird of prey stretching its wings across my back. This is amazing!
According to legend, after the Ashers came home, they were restored by one of the first priestesses,
Zoe explained.
The men regained their vigor and their strength of their will. I have painted her symbol on you, so you may have some of that strength now.
Thank you both, I said. Their combined presence and encouragement did wonders for my nerves, and any lingering jitters I was having finally ebbed away to be replaced with a swell of determination. Another chorus of trumpets rang out, and any people other than the duelists still in the fountain hurried out and onto the ledge. Mech's wife then practically floated across the water until she was in the center and raised her regal head. Just like she did with the pools in my back garden, she lifted her face to the sky, and even though she was kind of far away, the silver flash of her irises could still be seen. The spectators gasped when Dawn lowered her head with a snap and stared out over the water with her chrome-colored gaze.
Ashers!
The dear woman's voice resonated deeply, and I had no doubt she was channeling some supernatural force for it to sound like it was coming from my marrow.
Take up your shields! Show the goddess you are worthy of her sacrifice!
As if we were all tuned in on the same wavelength, every duelist there raised their shields above their heads and let out a battle cry.
Roar!
I added my voice to the almighty din and planted my shackled feet as I pushed the heavy shield to the sky. This next part I was the most prepared for, as it was the most crucial. When Lady Mech initiated the first blessing, she explained how when the water is transformed into that of the tithe waters, it becomes highly acidic, and only the combined concentration of the ashers can make the water just alkaline enough to withstand skin contact. So it made it incredibly important the men found the concentration and willpower in order to tap into the synergy around them enough to keep the water mild. This was the first step in the ritual, and from this point forward, there was no turning back. Because the pools in Ithaca's garden were small, it took barely any focus for me to transform them. But since Vane's fountain was easily 80 times the size, the water didn't change all at once. Buzzing energy could be felt in the air above us, as if there was an invisible ocean current rushing by. And if my hands weren't full with the shield, I would have reached up to run my fingers through the streams tugging at me. I lifted my shield higher and bared down on my focus, and I called up the tried-and-true seed pod imagery I was so fond of whenever I was training my time-trance abilities. The curious stream reached down and enveloped me in a swath of invisible energy that made the hair on my arm stand straight up. It was an incredibly energizing feeling, like I was being all charged up as if I actually ran on batteries. The weight of the shield lessened somehow, and I saw the surface of the water begin to smoke. At the same time, I felt the sensation of something dropping on my feet from under the water. And when I looked down, I could already see a small pile of gray pebbles as the drops of my blood were being converted into tithes. Once the steam started to roll off the water in earnest, an explosion of horns, drums, and string-type instruments broadcasted the fact the water was now free to wade into. A heartfelt cry circulated around the fountain as the spectators jumped and splashed into the water-bearing pitchers, clay jars, and anything they could use to scoop up the purifying stones. My feet throbbed, and the stones started to flow faster until my toes were almost completely buried. At first, the growing puddle of tithes freaked me out into thinking that was the amount of blood I was losing. But then I remembered it only takes one drop of blood to create one stone, so I relaxed.
Oh, Alex, the water feels so wonderful,
Shay said, as she followed the example of everyone around and submerged herself up to the neck as best as she could in the shallow water.
Zoe, come in!
I am content where I am,
my catwife said, where she sat on the ledge and simply swirled her feet through the water. What does it feel like? I asked Shay, who was now patting some of the water into her face with her bandaged hand, as if it was the fountain of youth.
There's a cooling feeling long after the water has evaporated,
she answered, and preened the golden feathers at her temples with a contented little sigh.
It's wonderful.
Dad! Rylan called. I turned, as best I could, with the shield and watched my foster son lead the rest of Team Ithaca toward me, and they were all laden with vases and jars of their own. Hey, bud, I managed to say without breaking my concentration.
"Mr. Jenner told me you need to focus, so I won't talk for long,"
he babbled, and I smiled at him good-naturedly for him to continue.
"I just wanted to tell you I have everything under control back at a campsite, so you don't have to worry about anything. And even Redburn's camp is under control, too. I should probably go tell him that, but I don't want to bother him."
"Ahem," Jenner said, as he took a seat next to Zoe and began taking off his shoes.
"Now, lad." "Oops, I'm talking too much, I'm sorry,"
he smiled sheepishly.
"I'll just gather some stones, but I just wanted to tell you that. Oh, and also I'm proud of you, Dad."
I smiled at my foster son when he hugged me quickly around the waist, and I was able to hold the shield extra high because of it. The rest of the waning afternoon passed by in some idyllic dream where I watched with a full heart as the members of my ragtag family enjoyed themselves in the fountain like everyone else seemed to be doing. Rylan, Arvid, and the Raccoon brothers made several trips back and forth to refill the pitchers with the tithes that would hopefully last until the duelists were once again called upon to give their blood to the people. The best part, though, was that Shay and Zoe stayed with me the whole time and helped me maintain my focus, especially when my arms began to twinge with the beginnings of fatigue. However, the night was soon approaching, and eventually the spectators were made to leave the pool's waters at the booming sound of Gatetown's evening cannon. The cannon was the signal that Nada Isle's large gate was to be closed for the night, which effectively sealed the inhabitants inside the island's walls.
"Hang in there, Asher Alex," Mech intoned from beside me in a faraway voice. "When the sun officially sets, the trials will begin."
The odd, enveloping energy suddenly added a weight to the burden above my head, and I breathed deep through my nose as my muscles trembled. It was almost as if there was a riptide threatening to drag me along the invisible rapids swirling around me. I dug my throbbing heels in harder and attempted to focus on my task. The feeling of cool hands danced on the backs of my heated shoulders. Two familiar voices spoke to me, but I was too deep within my pseudo-trance to really make out what they were saying. Still, I registered the voices had to have belonged to my wives based on the kisses I could feel bestowed on my face and lips. I wanted to return the gesture, but an unnamed force began to grip me in its throes, and I was unable to even form words. The shield grew heavier the darker the sky got, and I started to feel the ache in my forearms that was always the start of my troubles. Whenever I practiced with the heavy-ass disc, I was only ever able to make it about 3 hours before the pain and exhaustion forced me to stop. I had already surpassed that point thanks to all the bark and tea I was jacked up on, but I knew it wouldn't last forever. Sure enough, though, when the moon finally began to rise and the heaviness of the shield began to increase, it became a struggle to keep my breathing calm. It was as if the oppressiveness of the moonlight was wearing each of us down just as relentlessly as the erosion of the sea, and my legs shook as my shield dipped. Then, when I thought I was at my limit, the added weight bearing down on me suddenly vanished. However, I found myself feeling less relieved than I thought I would be when the surface of the water burst into flames all around me, not even a second later.